Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yeah, I think the thing about Woodside is that I think he's really physically talented. I think he's a very good athlete. I think he's got a live arm. I think there's a lot to like about him. I think the biggest thing with him that you don't necessarily love is they really haven't played much, you know, and playing in preseason, you know, is always different for coaches in terms of how they evaluate a guy than when you've played in the regular season. And so, you know, I would tell you that I think that he's more physically gifted than Trevor Siemian, but Trevor Siemian's played. And so there's an element of, like, comfort level of, like, hey, this guy's actually – he started multiple games before. We've seen him play on – you know, I think he's played a game on Monday Night Football. You know, we've seen him on Monday Night Football and how we respond to that.
That was ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck on Darren Donick and Chase talking about Trevor Siemian and Logan Woodside. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode. Joe, we talked about it earlier in the show, Titans with a shakeup yesterday – at the quarterback position, Trevor Siemian in, Cole McDonald out as a seventh-round draft pick from this past year's draft. Looks like Logan Woodside moved down to that third position. Now, we don't know that for sure. There could be a competition there. But to me, Joe, if you're making this move, if you're bringing Siemian in now, I think he's got to have a leg up on at least being the leader in the clubhouse for the backup quarterback position.
Well, we just talked about Vrabel in the last segment. I guarantee you his message to Logan Woodside is, go get
Show
it.
Show me something, kid.
Yeah, go get after it, you know? And that's the expectation. This is another test of Logan Woodside and how he can respond, and can he take all the impressive things he's been doing when they haven't been able to be on the field and take it to the field. Now, do I look at the signing as just a lighting of the fire under Logan Woodside? No, I think Trevor Siemian's probably going to be the two this year. It just makes sense. The guy has had a year in this league as a starter. It was a while ago, but he did some pretty good things with the Broncos in 2016. And it makes sense. It's one of those signings that, they're better at the quarterback now. They are now better with Siemian and Woodside than Woodside and Cole McDonald. It's just a real fast look for Cole McDonald.
See you later, kid. Now, I think there's a good chance McDonald ends up on the practice squad. Nobody's going to pick him up and put him on their active roster. Like, it's just not going to happen.
No. So that'll be there for them. And, again, he could give them a good look.
He's an interesting guy. Like, I think physically he's got some tools about his game that you can work with. I think he's a project. I mean, I'm not sure he's ever going to be like a, you know, starting quarterback in the NFL, but I think he could be a serviceable guy at some point.
Yeah.
He's just raw.
Right. And, you know, it's the run and shoot stuff from Hawaii. And I think sometimes the system QB thing gets overrated. I mean, look, a lot of college football is at least somewhat like that conceptually. There's a lot of one read quarterbacking in college football, but he had that. He has the little hitch in his throw, which he seemed to clean up a little bit, but still very raw. And that was very obvious from day one of practice.
Let's bring in our friend Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. Our Titans training camp coverage is sponsored by Wyatt Johnson Ford and Osteo Strong Nashville. Teresa, what's going on?
Well, sorry, I was sitting right here. My phone didn't, I guess I need to reset that do not disturb to like 7:55. I'm sitting here looking at it, and I didn't see the first call. So sorry to be a couple minutes late joining you guys.
Oh, it's all good. We disturb people far too often anyway, so that's our fault.
Well, that's true. But I'm happy to talk with you guys this morning.
So, Teresa, what were your impressions of the move the Titans made yesterday, and specifically the decision to sign Trevor Siemian?
Well, I'll say this. I wasn't impressed by Cole McDonald in what little bit we've gotten to see since Friday. They had him doing some, the catch me if you can kind of drill is what I kind of call it, where they take an offensive player, a defensive player, and, you run around some cones and you have to evade the tackler. And it's like, it's nice that he's athletic enough to do that, but you're drafted to impress me with your arm. And no offense, but Logan Woodside's passes just were crisper and more on target. And you could tell that when his ball went uncaught, that it was uncaught because, the receiver made the mistake. Did not see that with, unfortunately, Mr. McDonald. So, and when he was drafted back in April, there was a lot of talk about how he was working to adjust his, his throwing motion and things like that. He had a ton of yards in college. But as we've been talking about, going in this whole offseason, it's like, oh, my goodness, they've only got two quarterbacks on this roster with absolutely no NFL experience. And we've learned under the, in this last decade, from Jake Locker to Mariota, that you cannot have you have to have somebody with experience behind your starting quarterback because it's the NFL, and at some point you're going to need them. So it just feels like, okay, we've seen enough of this, and it's time to move on. Would he have been in it through an entire offseason program, and might that have helped him before getting to training camp in normal years? Sure. It's 2020. The Titans did not have that time to waste.
Okay, so how do you look at Siemian Woodside then, Teresa? You sound at least somewhat impressed with Logan Woodside so far. Do you look at this as a actual competition?
I'm going to say this. As many times as they have raved about Logan Woodside this whole year, him knowing the offense, the fact that he went to games last year and was charting plays during games, sitting in on meetings, he has a huge head start on Siemian in this offense with these coaches, with these receivers. So he has a foot up. Now let's see what this guy, this other guy coming in who has, I think, 25 NFL starts, see what he comes in and if he's able to establish himself quickly enough. He's got experience. I'm sorry, but Logan Woodside's experience in the pro level is at the AAF last year. So, that might be enough to lift him up. But, that's the thing. NFL experience versus knowledge of this system and these people and these coaches, we'll see what makes a difference. But, Logan Woodside, he's a shorter dude. I mean, at 6'1", it might be a generous listing at 6'1", but, his passes have, he throws the ball where it's supposed to be and catchable so that somebody can catch it and run with it, which those are the things that have stood out to me as I've tried to watch him this first week.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press on the line with us. Teresa, what have been your big takeaways from Titans training camp thus far, about a week into it?
Seeing Derrick Henry work an awful lot, in between periods on catching passes, becoming, he kind of strikes me, remember when Michael Jordan was playing, every offseason he would work on a specific facet of his game to get better at it, and usually he did. Well, Derrick Henry, how long has he been criticized? Well, he can't catch. He's not a great catcher. His hands aren't so great. That's why they have to have a third down back. Well, that, seems to be the area of his game that he is working to improve upon. And, is it still completely natural? Probably not. But I'm seeing his hands look a lot softer. And, he's working on catching the ball and turning and things like that. So, at a certain point, it will become more muscle memory, and he'll get better at it. If he's able to increase his catches, double his catches, say go from 18 to 40, that's going to make him such a much more effective back on third down. And that way, when they're mixing him and Evans in and out of the lineup, it's going to be tougher for defenses to key on him. That'll make that offense more potent and explosive.
Yeah, he's not looking like one of my favorite all-time quotes, Edward Scissorhands, anymore, like in high school. I give John Glennon credit for that one. That's a heck of a quote from Henry's high school coach. How about the other side of the ball, Teresa? We still haven't seen Vic Beasley. We are seeing a lot of DeAndre Walker. We're hearing about Jadeveon Clowney sitting out, which I don't buy at all. What's your concern level on pass rush for the Titans?
I'm not concerned yet because, again, they still have Vic Beasley. I mean, you know, we're just under a month away from their opener. So I'll get a little bit more concerned if we get closer and we're still not seeing Beasley on the field. This is the time that they should be looking at Walker and these younger guys. Sorry, cough.
No, you're good.
But, you know, this is a good thing. They're getting reps, and that's a very good thing. I do, you know, we worried about Corey Davis 2 weeks ago. Oh, no, he's on the PUP list. He's off of it. He's working. He looks good. We'll see Beasley.
Yeah, we'll see. I just, with Beasley, it's, well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's going to be so much focus on him. And,
to get out on the field.
Yeah, but it, like when he does, then it's going to be talking to us. And, you know, all the Titans players are saying, they're saying the right things. But, man, there's so much on him being able to come in here after all this and make a difference. And I don't know. We'll see how it works out. But, man, right now it's an inauspicious beginning.
Well, that's the thing. We've heard these rumors from Atlanta. And, you know, when you don't sign a guy that you took eighth overall, there's a reason. You know, this guy led the NFL in sacks his second year in the NFL, and he's not with his team. You know, look, you know, Jarrell Casey got not one but two contracts from the Tennessee Titans before they, you know, reached the end of the line, traded him away to clear space for Jeff Simmons. Why do you let go of a guy that, you know, you saw have 15 and a half sacks in a season? There's something going wrong there. And it was tough when he didn't show up for the first 10 days of camp. We're starting to think, is this a Kevin Dodd situation? Is this somebody who just doesn't? And you know, we've heard the Titans, Mike Vrabel, John Robinson, talk a lot about what kind of roster are they wanting. They're starting with guys who love football. The reason you have to love football is it is a grind. You know, you're there, you know, yes, you get off days, but guess what? With this testing with COVID, you got to be there every day to get tested. So it's not really an off day. You can't stay in your bed until you want to get up. I'll just say, and then there's lifting during the season, you know, Tuesday's an off day. Well, no, not if you have an injury or you're watching film, if you're going to be good. It is a grind. And if you don't have that just love of the game, it's easy enough to start looking at it as a business. And then the love, just, you know, then it just gets easier to say, why am I doing this? So we have never talked to Vic Beasley. We don't know what's going on. We're all anxious to talk to him the first day they make him available to us, to see what's going on. So, yeah, there's going to be those questions until we see him, until we talk to him, until we see him get on the roster. And we're all waiting for that.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Teresa, thanks as always for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, and sorry for the coughing fit.
No, you're all good.
We'll see you out there.
Bye.
When we come back, I want to dissect this Colorado-Arizona series that we teased earlier in the show and what that tells me about the state of the Nashville Predators. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning. Joe, we mentioned it earlier in the show. It wasn't a super eventful day yesterday in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Things went about how I thought they would go. One of the games, Colorado just absolutely destroyed the Arizona Coyotes 7-1. I think the game before that was like 7-1 too, wasn't it?
It's back-to-back.
Back-to-back 7-1?
Touchdowns. Yes. Ugh. Back-to-back touchdowns put on the Yotes.
And this comes after, I think, after their game four loss, Rick Tocchet, coach of the Coyotes, said, look, you find out who wants to be here and who doesn't, we better look like we want to be here in the next game. Well, let me tell you. Didn't look like you wanted to be there.
It looked like they said, hey, yes, we're going to show you how much you want to be here.
We're going to go home.
We're going to show you right now. Poor Darcy Kemper.
Yeah, like, look, that's fine that Tocchet's saying that. I just think that what I've thought all along, the Coyotes are not a very good team, which they are not, and Colorado is a really good team. That was the difference. I think there's that wide of a gap.
Yeah,
Arizona and Colorado.
Yeah, the Coyotes suck. And look, the Avs are good, and hey, maybe this will continue. They'll push for it, and it'll be this. The bigger story is here is that this is their year that it all came together. I mean, look,
they're good.
They can look awfully tough.
They are good,
but the Coyotes are bad. And I think that the Nashville Predators should have held another press conference, like a do-over press conference last night after the second straight 7-1 loss to tell us how well they played against the Arizona Coyotes.
Well, I got, you know, heading into the series, especially after it was tied 1-1, because I think Arizona won in game two despite being outshot like 50-19 or something like that. Darcy Kuemper just played out of his mind in that game. And I thought, okay, I got even got some tweets from Predators fans. They're like, all right, you know, I feel a little bit better than I did after losing the series just because, you know, Arizona's hanging in there toe-to-toe with Colorado. It's 1-1 series. And I was like, yeah, it's not really toe-to-toe. I mean, I get it. The Predators largely dominated statistically in that series against Arizona. The difference is Colorado has got the forwards to get in there and finish the job.
Right.
I mean, go watch where Nazem Kadri scored pretty much all of his goals in this series. It's right where I want these Predators forwards to get to, and that's smack dab in front of the net. To me, I think yesterday, and I even tweeted this out, I think if you were on the fence about that Arizona series, if you're a Predators fan and you're feeling good about the direction in which they were going, which admittedly at times looked a lot better than they looked in the regular season, there's a huge gap right now between the Predators and the elite teams in the Western Conference. I think there's a big gap between the Predators and Vegas. I think there's a big gap between the Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. And to watch that series unfold the way that it did and Colorado just totally destroy the Coyotes, that can't make you feel good if you're David Poile and the Nashville Predators.
I'm noticing some Samuel Girard in these playoffs. I'm noticing some Seth Jones in these playoffs. But, yeah, look, in general, Robbie, I'm not a big fan. I often fight against the transitive property in sports.
Sure, yeah. No, I'm the same way.
Like, you know, and like in college football, well, this team did this to this team. Yeah, every matchup's different. Every day's different. So, in general, I resist making too much of what the Avs did the Coyotes.
Agreed.
And totally changing your opinion on the Predators. But it does confirm anyone who was like, the Coyotes aren't good. You can't – like, I agree with the Predators that they sustained some good play that they hadn't been able to do enough during the regular season. Yes. They were right. But what you say after losing to the crappy Arizona Coyotes is it's not good enough. That's it. And I think it's more about this team was frustrating this year with a lot of things and intangibles and what they weren't doing and how they weren't reaching their level. But I think the bigger takeaway is they're not good enough. You know, like they were right. They did find a good level and it wasn't good enough. So if you want to compare yourself to the best teams and you want to go win a Stanley Cup, you've got to fundamentally change your roster in some way. I mean, think about this, man. 2 years ago, we were all clutching our pearls when the Avs took two games from the Preds in that series. You know, like, what is happening here? This should be a sweep. And 2 years later, it's like, can the Preds reach the Colorado Avalanche level of play?
Now, in fairness, that roster looks a lot different now.
It does.
In Colorado.
Well,
and
you just mentioned stud. You mentioned one guy they picked up who has been a big deal for them.
Oh, man. Kadri's been good.
Kadri's been awesome. So, no, I mean, they are. They've continued to build from there. Of course, that trade that involved Kyle Turris, big part of why they are where they are. So,
Cale Makar coming in. I mean, they got a lot of really good pieces. They're going to be good for a long time.
I still have my doubts just when we talk about the Avs. They still strike me as a team that will run up the score and just destroy crappy teams like the Arizona Coyotes. But as this tournament progresses, are they going to hang in there in one of those grindy, gritty 3-2 games and pull it out against another great team? We'll see. They still have to prove that to me. Right now, they strike me a little bit as the – and honestly, like sometimes how the Lightning have been too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, ooh, look at that. And then can you actually hang
can
in
you grind
and play
it
off hockey? But
like,
yeah,
can
they
handle the way Vegas plays? Because
like,
they're not going to blow Vegas out.
I mean, I really want that series to happen.
Oh, me too.
Right? We all do. And that will be the series, as a Predators fan, you watch and say, okay, this is what I want my team to be more like.
Right. It got me thinking, and through some conversations I've had over the course of the past couple days, just think about the trajectory of Peter Laviolette's career. Let's just think about this for a second. You go to Carolina, you win a Stanley Cup early on, it's great. You leave that place in shambles. It's just not good. He's gone.
You go to Philadelphia, first 2-3 years, it's great. They're playing really well. You get to the Stanley Cup final, you lose in 6 games to the Blackhawks. A couple years later, you get fired 3 games into the season. The Flyers suck for like 5 years. Predators, it starts off great. Third year in, you get to the Stanley Cup final. Things are looking good. When he left this team, this group was broken. I mean, you've heard John Hines talk about it coming in here, saying, "Yeah, mentally, it wasn't there." You had to repair like this team's fragility in terms of bad things happening. What in the world does Peter Laviolette do to these teams to leave them in the state that they're in after he's been there for so long? I just got to wondering about that.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I also, just like the transitive property, man, I hesitate because I think people always want to dump blame on whoever just left.
But that's a pretty consistent trend at this point.
It is. Now, I remember in their run 3 years ago, I talked to especially a whole bunch of Hurricanes from that era, and, man, it was like, that guy is the greatest motivator, coach. He was incredible. Nothing but love for him. But you know, to your point, we know that everyone here didn't love him on this roster. But I don't know. Can we really say that, like, their fragility was something he did to them?
I don't know if we could say that for sure. But it does, like, you get to this place where we've been trying to figure out what in the world is wrong with this group. Because you look at the talent, it's on paper there. The experience is there.
It's good.
It's good. It's good enough to be better than they've been.
Yes,
They should have been way better than they've been. It's been there. Like, you start searching for answers, and we've been talking about it for a year and a half now. Nobody's been able to come up with anything because you look at it and you're just perplexed. Okay. You got a lot of highly paid players on this team, a lot of guys who have been productive in their careers before. A lot of this core has a ton of experience in big games. I even talked about it heading into this Arizona series. Like, you know, this Predators team has been in high-pressure situations before. Arizona largely has not. How do you respond to it? And it hadn't meant a whole lot over the course of the last year and a half, 2 years. It just got me wondering, what's going on with this group?
Well, okay, so if we're going to talk about the Laviolette thing and leaving teams behind, I mean, a lot of times you talk about that stuff more with the GM, right? Like, GM builds up something and then leave, you know. But were the two teams he left before this, was it a matter of the rosters were not good or that they were underachieving because of some sort of mental deficiency?
I mean, that roster in Philadelphia is still pretty good.
Still pretty good.
Now, goalie was not. They've been trying to find a goalie in Philadelphia for 30 years. I think they finally got one in Carter Hart. But other than that, that roster was pretty good. Matter of fact, the fact that he got them to a cup final with, like, Brian Boucher as your goalie, it's pretty miraculous. I think they went through, like, 3 goalies. Like, Leighton was in goal that year. But it just got me wondering.
Yeah.
Seems to be a path of destruction
when
he's done.
I mean, it's a fair thing to bring up. I still feel like we're talking about adults here. And I think
I'm not trying to absolve players of responsibility, trust me, but yeah. it did get me wondering.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting point. When I look at this particular team, again, I think that there's a personality type in the locker room that they need a little bit different personality type in there with them. And again, it's like what we've talked about a lot, just nastiness, edge, whatever you want to call it. I think I don't think there's a bunch of these guys who were one way, and then Lavi got a hold of them, and now they're a different way. I think it's, you've got to think in terms of having guys like that. David Poile talked about playing like the Predators' way, right? I mean, that's kind of what it is. And
yeah,
I'm assuming there were guys who had that, and maybe they weren't as talented, but they had that, and so. I think that's what it is, but I had never thought of it the way you just said it, and it's certainly interesting.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the college football discussion. Who should be the favorites in the SEC West and SEC East this year? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Nashville SC is back in action this Saturday, taking on Atlanta United at 6 p.m. The game will be broadcasted on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 5:45. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson.
That's my song.
That's your song of the day?
Digital Underground today.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a good
choice. That's from a bad Chevy Chase movie. I forget the name of the Chevy Chase movie. It's a bad one.
Apparently it's that bad.
But
that's what you remember that song for?
Well, but that's the best part of that movie was that Digital Underground song.
Well, the best part of that song is that's the debut of young Tupac Shakur.
Little Tupac, who at first was like
a dancer.
Yeah, like a dancer on the tour and stuff for Digital Underground. Think about that.
He went from that song, that verse, to Tupacalypse Now. And if you've never heard Tupacalypse Now, that is a classic album.
It's a bit of a transition.
It is definitely a transition from this song to like the very first song of Tupacalypse Now.
Digital Underground and Tupac, a little bit different artists.
Yeah, the Humpty Dance.
A wide range. Yeah,
the Humpty Dance, and then there's Tupac.
Oakland, baby.
One of my friends' go-to karaoke song is the Humpty Dance.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. Still to this day,
it's an easy song to rap.
That's
to.
A good karaoke song. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy because like you can't do too complicated songs. Like when we went to SEC Media Days, when I was with like Barrett Salee and Aaron Suttles, they wanted to do like Bombs Over Baghdad by Outkast, and I'm like, this is literally the hardest Outkast song to sing. Like, I don't know why I'm picking this song.
If you guys know the song, It's the End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M., you familiar with the song?
Yep.
So I've done that. Well, I've done it at karaoke. My kids actually asked me, because I know every lyric, and it's like super, super fast. It's hard. It takes years to know this song. So I'm like, I do it in the car, and I'm good, but I've tried to do it at karaoke. Oh, man.
See, I thought you were more of Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball kind of karaoke guy.
Are you a big karaoke guy? Like, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
You know, my go-to is the Proclaimers. You guys know the Proclaimers?
Yeah.
500 miles. And I would walk 500. You know that song? Because you don't have to sing. You just do that. And you say, da-da-da. And the whole place, that's the type of karaoke song you need. Where you don't actually have
simplistic
to sing.
Yes.
Simple lyrics, and you just yell, and then everybody else yells, and you're a hero. And then you get like Bombs Over Baghdad would be a disaster karaoke.
It was
a disaster.
I think I still have the video on my phone, but if not, it's on the internet.
Of those guys? Did you do it?
Yeah, I was more backup dance singer for both like the songs that we did. Because like we also did Baby Got Back. I was just a really good backup hip, like a hype man. I was good.
Okay.
All right, so are you like Stone Cold sober karaoke guy, or do you need a couple sips of liquid courage to get up there and
I've never sat in a place that had karaoke and didn't have several beers at me already. Like, I don't, you know. Do you even go to a place with karaoke?
No, but
before you've been drinking somewhere else first? I don't think you do.
Probably not, but, I mean, some people just walk up there, man.
Well,
they're looking to prove something.
What happens at karaoke, you know, like in college there was a place that did it once a week, and we would go there. But what you all often have is, like, one or two people in that place who are, like professional singers.
I know.
Like, we had a guy who just would sing Sinatra, and he was just unbelievable. And so that guy's just sitting there, like, dressed nicely, not drinking.
That's a little much.
But, hey, it's a nice break from, like, nine college kids slobbering all over some song. And it's
the worst one
terrible.
Here, like, the bachelorette parties here that get up there and they try to sing karaoke together.
No.
It's enough to make me leave an establishment.
It's awful.
It's terrible.
You can't have – I mean, to me, like, three people is too much. A good duet, I'll give you guys George Walker and John Burton, our friends here.
Really?
I mean, in Pittsburgh one night, those guys tore up, like, about eight songs. And, like,
really?
We're talking, like, Johnny Gill, Hall & Oates, like, the full range of stuff. Yes.
Wow.
So if you get a chance to do, and I love you, George, but especially John Burton, do some karaoke with him, take that opportunity. Mayor of Broadway,
wow.
John Burton. Yes.
That's impressive. I didn't know that about them.
Yeah. So, no.
Always got to pick a song that you already know a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, don't pick songs that you've, like, never, like, knew the lyrics for.
Like, they've got the words on the screen in front of you. You need to pick a song where you don't need to look at those words.
And as long as I've been an Outkast fan, I have not learned the words to B.O.B.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, right. Yeah. So then you got to look at the screen, and it's, no. And by the way, we have a guest later, Kayla Anderson, and she does, do you guys know the song Black Velvet by Alana Miles?
Oh, yeah.
Great song.
Yeah.
In Denver last year, she, by herself, packed karaoke bar, brought the house down.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
Who knew?
And that's a great, great song. And I wouldn't say not an easy karaoke song. Like, you got to be able, you got to have pipes to.
Who knew
to do
that,
that
Nashville
song?
Media had so many vocalists? Like TD, even. He was trying to be humble about it, but he can sing.
Can he? I've never heard TD sing.
I guarantee
sing.
You can.
We'll have to ask him next time he's on.
I guarantee you can sing.
I bet you he goes on stage.
Oh,
stage.
Yeah. I believe.
Like Teddy Pendergrass.
Well, yeah. I believe he was there that night. I don't remember him getting on stage. So, but I put
he's
in a song and didn't get up there either. So,
all right.
He just doesn't want to, you know, show you guys up by singing Teddy Pendergrass.
Right.
Because once Teddy Pendergrass comes on, it's.
You're not coming on.
It's all hands on deck after that point.
All right. I do want to get into the SEC here in the next little bit, Joe, because it's interesting to me to view it this year. And we've talked ad nauseum about college football, our doubts about whether or not they're going to finish the season. And I'm going to table that right now. I just want to let's approach this as if the season will be finished and will be completed. Who do you view as the favorite in the East? Because the way the schedule has broken out, I think there's a good chance Florida could win the East. Like, it's pretty much been Georgia's division to win or lose the last couple of years. I think Florida has a really good chance this year to win the East.
No, I do too. I think that this could be – it could flip to them. And, look, so much of it depends on quarterback. Kyle Trask, I like him. And if he's able to take a big step, then I really like Florida's chances. Of course, Georgia – we believe at this point, and I'm now failing on the name, the transfer from Wake Forest, who I like. He's a good player, but that's still there's still a bit of unknown. Jamie Newman coming in there and presumably starting for Georgia this year. I mean, that's kind of a – sometimes that works out. And if you're a team like Georgia – I mean, look, Georgia still has a lot more talent top to bottom. Like our guy David Ubbin did a, again, recruiting rankings, you have to take them with some level of grain of salt, but the comparison between Tennessee and Florida in recruiting is actually not that far.
Right.
Tennessee and Georgia, which also means Florida and Georgia. Yeah, there's a big,
pretty
gap.
Big gap.
I mean, Kirby's been recruiting, okay?
Yes.
So they still are the best team in the East, but if the quarterback position is significantly better for Florida, and it could be. That could be it. And like you said, the schedule also plays into that.
How much do we think Kirby Smart is kicking himself right now for making the decision to go with Jake Fromm instead of Justin Fields? Being a lot different situation this year.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields' upside, let's face it, it's a lot higher than Jake Fromm.
Well, look.
Jake Fromm's a great college quarterback. I don't want to take anything away from him. But Justin Fields is in a different category.
Well, Jake Fromm seemed to decline. I mean, don't forget, you know, Jake Fromm came in as a true freshman.
I know.
And he had a guy who now they're both in the league, by the way.
Eason.
And the Colts, and Jacob Eason, who everyone would swear to you, Jacob Eason is flat out more talented than Jake Fromm.
Yes.
He's got a bigger upside. But Jake Fromm comes in. Jake Fromm is the classic, like, super mature as a freshman, able to handle an offense, manage a game, and be solid. It's like you feel safe. Like, again, with Georgia, it's like a guy like that, you're fine. You run the football. You play defense. They tried to get Justin Fields on the field some and use him here and there. He was a freshman. Fromm was established. But, yeah, you look at what Fields was last year, it's like, holy cow,
yep,
man. And this is one of the things, you know, if we don't get to see Justin Fields play in college football game, which I believe that's going to be the case, that's just – that's a loss for everyone. That's
a pretty good chance he'd have won the Heisman this
year.
That's
a big elf. Yeah. Well, I mean, Lawrence
Trevor
or Fields.
Lawrence, Fields.
You're easily your top two candidates. So it is too bad. But, yeah, of course, if you're Kirby Smart right now, you would love to have Justin Fields. Hey, the portal's open.
Yeah, come on down, Justin Fields. Forget about the NFL. Let's just get back in
if
there.
You really want to play.
That's right.
In the fall. But that's the thing. They're not. And the NCAA is freezing eligibility, which I think is great. And then they're denying Cade Mays
so stupid
a transfer. And they would deny, I would assume, anybody going right now would probably deny. To me, that should be an automatic rubber stamp. If a league does play and a kid comes from a league that isn't playing to one that is, why is that different than like when the coach gets fired and things like that? But they're not going to do it.
No, they're not going to do that because that's the NCAA. That would make too much sense. Why would they do that? Very quickly, as we look at the other side of the division, SEC West, Alabama, LSU are going to be the two favorites. I would probably give the slight edge to Alabama, just given what LSU lost on offense. But do you think LSU, even though they're a little bit younger this year, could they give Alabama a pretty good run for their money in the West?
Maybe. And again, it's like quarterback. Look at all that LSU had for so many years. And I know some of it is scheme too, and OC and all that. But still, what it comes down to is they found a difference maker at that position. All of a sudden, everything, it's like, holy crap, this is a machine.
Maybe the greatest college football season ever.
Yeah, and he was incredible. So you're taking a huge step down from that. I don't know. I mean, Munson, I don't know how you feel about Mac Jones. I think he's so-so, whatever.
He's so-so.
But I still feel better about their QB situation than LSU's right now, the unknown. I mean, so I would go with Bama. I also think when we talk about quarterbacks who I like and who I think are going to be pros, you know, Kellen Mond at Texas A&M, that staff's making a whole bunch of money. They got talent. Like, that's a team I look at as maybe someone who can make a move. They need to
make
a move.
They're paying Jimbo like they need to make a move soon.
That's right.
So at what point does that pressure get turned up on him? Not that there's really anything they could do because they signed him to an astronomical contract. So,
but it can be uncomfortable down there.
I will say he does have the most experienced quarterback in this whole.
Kellen Mond's good.
I mean, you know, I know Mississippi State has, you know, KJ Costello. But, I mean, is Mississippi State going to be that good the first year under Mike Leach? Probably not. So
they'll probably be fun. Look, they'll be fun.
I'll look at Texas A&M as like a maybe or a three or two or three. They could easily jump over LSU because LSU is going to have some major drop-off, especially with them losing every player on offense and almost every player on defense, but they still have talent there. Same for Alabama, but the only thing that makes you comfortable about Mac Jones is he still has like two talented wide receivers.
Yeah.
And Jalen Waddle and
Devontae Smith.
So, and then it's all to say whether or not Najee decides to, you know, play or sit out. He's one of those people that is in that same category as Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, of one of these guys who can be a first-round pick, late second round, that could easily just sit out this season. So, you know, I think that takes into account as well. So
I would tell him,
yeah,
have a seat, man. That's just me.
I'll go Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M just because I have to see Texas A&M and Kellen Mond on the field first.
Not going to leave room for a random Gus Malzahn year coming to the top.
Hey, Bo Nix.
We see it like once every 7 or 8 years.
That's what he does, though.
Yeah, I know.
When you least expect it, Bo Nix rises up.
He's good.
He was hit or miss last year.
Now, I like him.
I like him a lot.
I like his upside for sure.
Yeah, in big game situations, especially against Florida, yeah, he was a little bad. But there are some few bright spots there. It's there. It's definitely there. Then he's got one of probably the best wide receiver outside of Alabama and Seth Williams, who actually went to the same high school I did.
He's a stud.
Nice.
He's a stud. So I think they're another team that, you know, they can be in that top tier. I just know Ole Miss is probably not going to be there, at least not yet. Mississippi State's not going to be there, at least not yet.
Arkansas is definitely not going to be there.
Even.
Sorry to my friend Jordan listening.
Arkansas' schedule is so hilarious, man. Like, they actually put out a press release like, we are playing the toughest schedule in the history of college football. Bring it on! Woo-pig.
Woo-pig suey, baby. When we come back, how close is Tennessee to competing consistently with Georgia and Florida? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, taking you through this Thursday morning. Joe, we were discussing the SEC in the last segment, and we're talking about Georgia and Florida in the East, and it seems like we've been having this conversation for the last 15 years, but we're going to continue to have it anyway. How close do we think the Vols are to competing consistently with Georgia and Florida in the East? And it's interesting how my answer has shifted on this in the past calendar year, because let me tell you this. If you'd asked me after the Florida game last year from Tennessee how close they were to competing with Florida and Georgia, I would have said, yeah, about 10 years. Whenever Mullen leaves, whenever Kirby Smart's gone, that's when they could compete with Florida and Georgia. You mentioned the recruiting rankings being pretty much on par with Florida. The way Tennessee finished out the season last year, I think it's closer to Florida than some people would want to admit. Now, I realize, what's Florida won? 14 out of the last 15 in this matchup, something like that. That's not close. I get that. I'm fully aware of that. But I think Tennessee, from a talent perspective, has done a good job under Jeremy Pruitt of closing that gap.
Well, Jeremy Pruitt is absolutely more impressive as a recruiter than the last two Florida coaches. That's Jim McElwain, who did not take advantage of the advantages you have at Florida. And so far, Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen, I like Dan Mullen a lot. We're going to see with Dan Mullen on – we know that he can take go to a place like Mississippi State and I think do just a tremendous job. I mean, I think the job Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State is up there with some of the best jobs done by college football coaches in that period.
Oh, yeah.
Any league you want to pick. Not easy, and he did a great job. There are coaches who are a little bit more, quote-unquote, coach-em-up coaches. I covered a guy like that at Michigan State, Mark D'Antonio, and for a stretch of time getting Michigan State where he got them. A lot of it was finding the three-star, two-star even. I mean, like Le'Veon Bell, two-star. Kirk Cousins, two-star, you know, and developing them. Sometimes it's maybe getting lucky. Jack Conklin, zero-star,
right?
Coaching up kids wasn't, you know, he was never a guy just reeling in four and five stars. I think over a period of time, and I think more even in the SEC, you've got to do that to be competitive. And I think if you're a Tennessee fan asking this question, I mean, you have to be excited because it's not just that Pruitt is bringing in four and five stars. You got to do that. But it seems like he understands what he's looking for in players. He's not just strictly devoted to recruiting rankings. I think that's a fair criticism of Butch Jones. Butch Jones had some great recruiting classes, but, and I heard this even when he was coaching, you hear it a lot more now, there was a little bit of like,
what are you doing with
disconnect? Yeah, certainly development, but even like disconnecting evaluation with him that I don't think is there with Pruitt. And Pruitt, you know, before he came to Tennessee, was known as a guy who had a keen eye, and that is a evaluating, developing, huge, huge part of this. Tennessee is going to be able to be in there for top kids because of what Tennessee has to offer. And that's why Tennessee, to me, is still a program that should be in that upper crust. Now, you got to do a lot of things to get there. And obviously, when you're a decade plus of not being there, it makes it harder. But I don't think they're far away at all. That was a long way of me answering you with, I don't think they're far at all from Florida. Now, Georgia has been Georgia is in a great – we talk about the Florida schools and all the talent that's right there for them, but
oh, man.
Georgia is right there with so much talent. Now, of course, that's also – that's where Pruitt is very strong, is in Georgia, and he has done some great stuff to get some kids out of there.
Well, let me ask you guys this way then, and I know it's kind of a little bit too early to tell, but is Jeremy Pruitt in better shape after 2 years than Butch Jones?
I think – from a roster standpoint, probably not. Because remember, I think it was Butch Jones' third year. That was going into 2016, I believe. And that was when, you know, the Vols were picked by some to be in the playoff that year. I mean, they were really, really good. So I don't know from a roster standpoint, especially at the quarterback position. I think people at the time and certainly now looking back on it, I think they underrated just how good Josh Dobbs was for Tennessee. And Garantano, he's just not that guy. Like he's got stretches of where he's played pretty well, but Josh Dobbs was pretty consistently productive. If not throwing the ball, then he was a heck of a weapon running the ball. What I think they're in a much better situation is the young guys that they have coming in and playing are getting better, are developing. We talked last week, Joe, about, you know, you look at the draft coming up. Tennessee, if the season moved to the spring, they'd probably be in pretty good shape because they're not going to have a whole lot of guys going to the draft. Like Trey Smith is probably at the top of that list. There's not going to be a whole lot of guys after that. But their talent is in the younger class, the freshman, the sophomore classes that Jeremy Pruitt has been able to put together. And you look ahead at the recruiting rankings right now for the class of 2021 for Tennessee, it's looking pretty darn good. So from that standpoint, I certainly trust Jeremy Pruitt in terms of development a ton more than I ever trusted Butch Jones.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Marquise. The problem is, like, if you went back to then after the 2014 season with how recruiting was going,
yeah, you'd feel pretty
you'd
good.
You'd have as
every bit as much, if not more, optimism about where things were going under Butch then as there is now under Pruitt. And so, like, it wasn't until that 2016 season was – that was their fourth year, actually.
Fourth year, okay.
And you're right. They were picked to win the East. I mean, you're talking about some – you know, you got Derek Barnett coming off the edge. You've got Jalen Hurd and Alvin Kamara in the backfield, and Kamara being underutilized. And I think Josh Dobbs, like you said, underrated and a guy who helped the Butch Jones weaknesses be hidden longer.
Yes.
You know, he carried along that program, honestly. And then at the end of that season, you saw, whoa, there's some issues here. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it all falls apart on him. So I think with Pruitt, and it's funny, you're right, the Florida game last year, so Georgia State, and then they blow BYU, and they go to Florida. And first of all, I'm like, okay, well, Jarrett Garantano's not playing quarterback ever again for these guys. We know this. And I never thought Pruitt was going to be fired, but I was like, this is going to be like a 4-8 year, and it's going to be a horribly uncomfortable 2020 yep. for him, and we know what happened. So right now, I think fans should feel better than they did back then at the exact same time about Butch Jones. But again, if you go back to that time period, hey, Tennessee is a place where you can recruit and bring in really good players, and there was some excitement about Butch Jones. I think Jeremy Pruitt certainly has the track record right now of, again, evaluating, developing, and also actually finishing on recruits that should make you feel like in a couple of years this roster is going to be good enough to be right there to win the SEC East. But then the number one thing is, again, the QB position. Is Harrison Bailey a star at that? You got to have someone great at that position.
Right.
Well, the reason why I asked that question is because I think Jeremy Pruitt is in a tougher coaching situation with his two counterparts than I think Butch Jones was. You got to think Mark Richt was still there at Georgia, but and they were so-so. And then you had Jim McElwain at Florida. So the competition level in the East was a little bit more open back then than it is now when you have Kirby Smart, who probably outside of Nick Saban, one of the best coaches. And then when you look at Dan Mullen, Dan Mullen was one of the top coaches in the SEC West, in my opinion. So it's a little tougher for Jeremy Pruitt to crack that surface because it's a little harder surface to crack.
Well, I think it's a great point. And also, if you're Tennessee, one thing you've had to deal with since 2007 is Nick Saban's on the other side on your crossover game every year.
Right.
That's I mean, you're playing Alabama, the best team in the nation, every single year. So where your margin for error, if you're Georgia and you're playing Auburn every year, where Auburn's a good program, they're a very good team, but you're not going to lose to Auburn every single year. You've got a little bit more margin of error to play with. Tennessee, I mean, you've chalked up the Alabama game as a loss. I mean, you're coming out of the gate with an SEC loss every year. That's something that Jeremy Pruitt has to deal with as well.
Yeah, and then you have some – I mean, 2016, for example, they were had an incredible run. The win at Georgia, the Hail Mary. They finally lose that crazy game at Texas A&M, but then it's like, oh, and now you get Bama. And they lost like $1 million to nothing because they were just toast. And then they had another tough game. So it's also like Bama seems to get stuck in the middle of these terrible stretches for them too.
And they don't have that this year. The stretch is not quite as daunting right. this year with the way the schedule is released. So I'm not saying they're going to beat Alabama
say,
this year.
Okay, so you got them beating the
Tide.
Yeah,
I got them
beating
the Tide this year, ending that streak. I think I was there the last time they beat Alabama. It was 2006. I was 14.
Wow.
I'm about to be 28.
And Alabama at that point, by the way, was what Tennessee is now. Like, how could this
yes.
program be this mediocre for this long? How could that happen? Will they ever come back? Will Alabama ever be back? That's what people were saying.
That's what they were saying. You're right. When we come back, we will dive back into the Titans discussion. Some big moves made yesterday by the Titans. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are no such thing as a fish.